it's a small meeting, and I think it's, I'd like to keep it very interactive, because I've heard over the many conversations across many of the after meeting discussions that we've had, a lot of stuff on meeting on mailing lists and just general discussion with people, that there are a few things that people don't quite understand or get, or the misnomers or rumors. And well, those are the three ones that I keep hearing, right? Install is hard and confusing, the upgrade is hard and confusing, and it's just very hard to manage. And well, lucky for you, I'm here to show you the top of the truth. So what I'm really planning on doing is making this as interactive as possible, trying to answer as many questions as possible. I'm going to be actually doing an install and an upgrade, and showing you some of the features, I suppose, that you can do if you want to speak when you're running OpenBC in a large infrastructure, such as automation and things that people will know, familiar with Jumpstart or the Linux Kickstart thing. So I'll touch upon that and just go through a couple things. And so I want you guys to stop and ask me every single time you have a question or something doesn't make sense. Or if it's far too easy, you guys have done this and you really don't care, we'll skip ahead and we'll trash the slides and we'll talk about something else. Completely open to that, because, well, I like to be useful. So really, the installation is extremely straightforward, right? So there are a lot of people get confused. That I've heard that people get confused with the installation process. It's confusing, and there's a lot of text. I don't really understand how it works, and it's very scary in that sense. So really, this is just five simple steps. You prepare for the install, you do the disk layout, set up the network, you extract the sets, and then you do some final configuration bits, and that's pretty much it. So it's meant to be pretty straightforward and just enough to get you up and running. And then a little more, and that is really up to you on how far you can go. So I'm just, like I said, I'm just going to go through it. And if you guys seriously think that this is too crazy and silly, please stop at any point. So I just simply booted up a RAM disk. So the nice thing about OpenBC is you can always install from basically one disk. You can still install it on basically any architecture that supports floppy, and it's still one floppy. Of course, you can do a CD, you can fake CBoot, you can do a whole variety of things, but for the simplicity, because it's a remote box or a console, I just did a RAM disk. So it's pretty easy. So I'm just going to say install, start, I choose my terminal type, and I start, and I'm prepared to go. So again, please stop me if you guys think it's silly. This is the disk bit. This is basically asking you which disk you want to use. Pretty simple. Do you want to use all the disks for OpenBC? I do, so I'm just going to say yes. And now we're at the familiar disk label editor. That we're all familiar with most PCs, or anything else that uses a disk label, which is everything. First, I think I should probably leave whatever I had here. So just to be very simple, I'm going to add a partition, just say 2 gig for now, and we're just going to make one slice. And that's really it. Is that confusing at all? Do you raise your hand, did you? Well, this is the part that people actually get really confused. This is where I hear a lot of the confusion, is the disk setup. They get lost in the disk setup. So, here's your chance. Alright, so we're ready to go, format the disk.
Isn't it like using F disk in Windows?
Yes. No, not. So I do some quick network configuration stuff, as for the very simple stuff, and you can see it just kind of flows. Can you believe I don't even know what my IP addresses are?
Do you have a public address?
Yes, I have public addresses. So this is a remote server.
Oh.
Now this is something very interesting, or not very interesting, but yes, I can do IPv6 installs if I want. And which actually I'm going to do for you. Name server, forget about the default route. You really don't need one, but we'll go ahead and put one in and we'll just read that. No, root password. Okay. Is that confusing? Is that pretty straightforward? Yes?
Right. Yeah. Can we assume that the reason why you can type all, you know, respond to this problem so quickly is that you've done this paint that's before, you know exactly what you want?
Very possibly, yes. So let's go, I'll take that. So let's go through some of these things. If you want, we can quickly go back to maybe the network stuff, but I don't have that much time. I guess I can go back, right? Just go back to where you want.
Go to the prompt effectiveness goal.
Can we start over?
Yes, start over.
All right. So that's the kind of cool thing. You can just start
from
scratch.
That's what you
can do,
right?
Start over.
I mean, you can launch install again.
Well, for example, when, you know, like my specialty is Perl, so I install modules from
you just go.
The archiving. CCAN all the time, but almost all of them just install themselves. You know, we don't stop and have to just decide something.
Right.
And it's like the second or third time that somebody asked me to make a decision in the install process, that's when I stop and I don't install.
Okay. So
that's where I'm coming from.
Okay. Okay. So I mean, I'll just slow down a little bit then. So as you can see, I just control C out of the whole process, and all it is a mini RAND disk, and that's all it is. You can do an install or update, so I just know how to do an install. Yeah?
Can you control C out? I mean, you do this from the CDs, right?
Yep. This is the same install process, CD, floppy, Dixie boot, NFS. It's the same RAND disk, because it's all in the RAND disk, so everything is exactly the same.
Okay. I remember wondering that if they... yeah, just exiting out of it, control C and typing install again, if that would proceed with a functional normal install or if the previous install would cause errors doing it.
So actually, I'm glad we did this one because it will tell you. So there is one thing that the install, if you control C out of the process and you go back into it, the install process will look for the FS tab, basically to see if you've done anything with the disks, which is usually the very beginning of the install process. If that exists, then it will ask you, do you want to resume your previous installation or do you want to start from scratch? So you can resume it or you can start from scratch and see that. Does that make sense? Yes, yes.
Did it commit the changes you made to the disk right away? Or did
yes. So as I'm doing it, it's committing the changes that it made a slice.
Change my back to the site that's formatted to your disk?
Yes. Yes. Actually, that's why it asks you back here, are you sure? Somewhere over here. Yeah, it probably does. Are you sure? Somewhere. Oh, I don't know. I can't find it right now. See the spell. Well, we'll see in a second. Yeah, so it does do the thing as it goes. It doesn't wait very long. Any question?
No, it's just that if you have any. An installation that's only up and running in ASP.ORT in your room, when you get the initial boot menu, when you bring the machine up, you can just say boot/ASP.ORT.
Correct.
And
correct.
Upgrade and download it off the
computer. That's exactly the easiest way to do it, an upgrade. It's actually from the current installation. You reboot to the random kernel and you say upgrade instead of install. Because it asks you at the very beginning, do you want to upgrade or do you want to install? And or you can use shell, and RAMDisk is a great single user mode thing. It's basically hopping into the box if you need to get it for any reason, single user mode. Outside of using single user, look, yeah, you can boot it from kernel, that's just kind of RAMDisk utility. It's kind of limited, just really meant for isolation. But you can. Nice. You can also restore off tape from the install. You can restore off anything, basically, if you need to, when you install the RAM disk install. So, all right, so let's just start this again. Yeah, see, this is really big if I can get this.
Explain terminal type then, because... Seriously, people haven't done the install.
So it's basically, it's the terminal that you're...
The output of what you're doing, maybe.
Yeah, I mean,
you should probably just go with the default there.
Yeah, basically, what it should do is figure out the terminal from TTY, what type of terminal from which you are connecting. to it. It'll either be VT100, 220, sometimes with the X term. If you need to manually set it, if it's something that it's not recognizing, you need to set VT20 or. I personally have never touched that. So you can change to VT100 or change it to X term carbon graph very soon. Key mapping, we'll just do an alpha list of installing the languages. I think I'd like to install it. I'm not going to load a key mapping. And this is your question. It looks like you seem to be trying to restart interrupted installation. We can skip the disk installation or we can start again. So do you want to skip it? No, we don't want to skip it. Let's get that question. Yes. All right. So now we're back to this thing. Which is the root disk that we want to use? And this will typically give you a list of disks, SD0, 1, 2, 3, 4. If it's IDE, ATA, IDE, rather, it'll be WD. You guys probably know that.
Can you have it show you a list of available disks?
Yes, it will show you a list of available disks if I have more than one disk in there.
By default, it shows the parentheses.
Yeah.
Correct.
Did the disk install? Hold on, I'm going to find a way. Sorry?
I've not
had
that happen. You should reboot it.
Yeah, well, I don't want to reboot. It's already wiped the disk.
You can mount the partition and remove the step.
Yeah. So, I'm starting a little bit stuck. I don't want to skip it.
Yeah.
Well,
did you practice before?
No, I didn't actually. We're just going to skip the distance. We've already done that. So I'm just going to go back here. So I need to reboot it to get it back into that, and I already wiped the disk, unfortunately, to do that. So right here, the available disk, this will list you the available disks available. And since there's only one, it's just SD0. Ask me if I want to use the entire disk for OpenBSD. Typically, I say yes, unless I want dual boot. Anything?
And so they also, if you get your system from a vendor like Dell, they also give you like a partition or two of like diagnostic stuff.
Yeah.
In that case, you might want to leave that alone. Like say. Right, some entire disk for OpenBSD, and you go into disk label, and you'll see like the dots, you know, the four partitions of dots disk label. You'll see one or two of them populated with the vendor software, and you pick an available one, and then select that, put type A6 for OpenBSD, select it as bootable flag, and then you can put your OpenBSD partitions inside that partition.
Right. So what you're talking about is this.
To leave the, leave the partitioning the way it is.
Right, so typically you'll see this, but if you have a vendor, if you have wiped your disk and you have a vendor previously installed, you know, if it's sometimes a recovery disk for laptops, they have the HP has this little pre-allocated space in the beginning for recovery mode and stuff like that. You'll see that typically under 1 or 2 or 0. And sometimes you want to just leave that in there. So that's the case where you want to say, no, you don't want to use all of it. You just go in and say,
if you're going to use the whole disk, is it like a convention that you could always use partition for? I mean, that's where it was there. Is that just by default?
So by default, that's where it puts it. You can put it anywhere. If you can put it in zero, it
doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Not at all. So it's probably where you restart this. Just go back here. So we said yes, we want to use all of it, wipe it all. And then it will go to disk label, which is what this little bit right here is, all disk label. What I did here is I deleted all the existing partitions just so I can start from scratch. And I hit A for add, and I just hit the defaults, except I did 2 gigs instead of the whole disk. This is the same disk label that we see on all the DSDs.
Is there anything tricky you could pull off, so instead of looking at the disk and bytes or whatever, you can look at it, maybe something a little more computer readable? That's one thing that I always find.
There is. I don't know.
This way, when you have like cylinder and sector phone,
yeah,
and that's it's not any more readable, but it's the numbers are smaller.
I'm just trying to think of it in like in terms of gigabytes, megabytes, things like that.
There. Print in gigabytes. Print in gigabytes.
Cool.
So we're going to add 2 gig.
Cool.
I'm sure that's other places too. I imagine this.
Do you need a swap?
Sorry?
Are you going to hit swap? Do you need swap?
You don't need swap. You can add swap if you want. You don't have to. I mean, you can, most of these days you can run without swap. But for this purpose, I'm just not running the swap. You know the old saying, it's twice the amount of RAM, so you can do a dump or dump. If you want.
What are you doing? Suspend the RAM. You don't have enough RAM.
Suspend the RAM, suspend the disk. So this is where you can
talk about. You swap it all?
Yeah. So suspend the RAM actually writes to a specific partition. So if you have whatever kind of laptop, they have a certain type in the very first slice where it actually dumps the entire contents of RAM to disk, and then the BIOS will read that RAM right back. So it doesn't use swap at all. Swap is really for swapping processes as well as something called.
You did have a lot of 10FFS partitions that might be prudent to have swap in case your 10FFS starts filling up a lot and you're using memory.
You could
have what's your 10FFS to swap as a kind of the back and store.
Well, you could use 10FFS, but OpenBSD at least has NFS, which is memory box.
Or MFS.
Right, so you don't need swap, physical disk swap.
You don't need it, but if you could.
You could.
If you have a lot of that, you might be worried about, well, if you fill up all your memory with the NFS, you can at least write some stuff out to swap.
Well, when NFS processing gets full, it's file system, so it's full. It doesn't swap over to anything else.
Why not? But it's coming in. If you have a lot of them or you have big ones, it might fill up most of your RAM and allocate the file.
If you're eating up your RAM with your NFS slices and then you have to need to swap because of other processes, then you would need to swap the disk.
Right. So that would be a lot of the reason why you might want to kind of swap because you're kind of the backing store of your NFS in case you start filling up all your RAM.
Okay.
With NFS.
Okay. I can do that. Although if you're in a client that I have right now, at 32 to 100 gigs of RAM, you're not really running that problem. No, not running those keys.
Does you run them off those little, like, 2 gigs of cards like you like you're running off the memory card, or are we going to install on the
memory card? Oh, no, I'm installing somewhere else, but yeah. If I'm installing on a Socrates or something like that, I won't install swap at all.
You'll never.
I don't have swap on my laptop, I don't think. You can see. If anybody can see. Well, I do have swap because I do the touch and develop on this.
But in general, if you're running off one of those little cards, you wouldn't use swap.
No, if I have enough RAM, if I have 128 megs of RAM, even 64 megs of RAM, I don't think I would.
Even if you don't, you have like a 2 gig card, CF card you use in a Sophos or something like that.
Right. If you absolutely need it on a pinch, you can always add a swap file, like any other OS or Linux. Swap to a file instead. So you absolutely need it in a pinch.
There's no point in small disk. There's no fast space.
Yeah, it's not blocking here, right? So, I don't know where it was. I've kind of gone back and forth. So we're back here. So I just added one slice, and that's all we did, and formatted it right here, 3 gig slice. And going back to the network stuff, and the next thing really is the network configuration. Hostname, I call it VOP. Hostname, I can't.
What do network interfaces are recognized here? And there's drivers or patches out there.
If they're not recognized here, then basically. In situations where there are three floppies available, three floppies have a variety of a combination of the most common disk and network cards. The AA version, if you will, has probably the most common. B and C have the less common.
Right.
So if you're running off a floppy, you're going to have to make sure that we read the docs, say, okay, I have this weird card or a card that's supported only on floppy D, and you boot off this. But the RANDisk kernel, which is the same one CD uses, Pixie Boot, whatever, is basically everything that you can get.
What if you're in a scenario, though, with just a new driver that wasn't yet on the booting CDs? What are you going to do then? There's a lot of booting floppies or the RANDisk. What are you going to do?
Well, if you have...
From the snapshot.
Just boot up a snapshot. BSD.
So then you go straight for a snapshot? I mean, I'm just curious what you would do.
If I have a system that I have no driver for that init card for some reason, I would then do whatever RANDisk has its snapshot current, something in the future.
State release.
Whatever.
Dish height.
So here we get a list of interfaces available. Interfaces BGE 0 and 1. I choose to start with BGE 0. I give it a name. I want to do any media configurations here. I say no. I set the IP address, netmask. I do RTSOL to pull in IPv6. It's basically kind of like DHCP, but it's basically router solicitation from the daemon that's running on the machine. To do IPv6, and then it says my next available interface is 1. I said, forget it, I'm done, I just want to do that. Domain, DNS server, DBAR route, root password. Good.
Cool.
All right, now let's see if we can start this thing. You see, it'll remember a lot of things, not everything, but it'll remember most of them. Right. That's the done. That's my domain, my name server. All right, I have a host, name configuration, no. My root password,
There's some way to get to like the head main page or something close to it. Right there?
Sure, right here.
A little bit less bugged out.
Yeah.
Okay.
During the install process.
I don't, there are no main pages installed. The only main pages installed are the disk label on the F.
All right.
Yeah. Is there?
They're all online.
Can you, for the record, give us crash course of Ed, and you have passed all that already? But
crash course on Ed?
Yeah.
Here now.
Like the group
crash course.
Like
that.
So what? Like, if you answer yes there, and you've never used Ed before, and see, been around Unix a long time. Like,
right,
you're a heavy Linux guy. You've never
used Ed.
You didn't know it existed.
Man, Microsoft Word.
Yeah. Well.
Is this going to be useful?
Wow.
I'm a little stumbled.
You don't
have
to use
Ad.
You don't have to use
Ad. Or is there a reason why not AI?
Because it's not space, right? Exactly. You have to
have
library.
Yeah, sure. Okay.
Yeah, but you found a library. It's not in /bin, it's in /user bin.
Okay.
They can something that's in user bin
statically. Yeah, then it is.
Sorry?
Then it is, they use VI.
Oh, they have this home down version of the app?
Yeah.
Okay.
How about geometry?
Sorry?
How about you choose that disk geometry?
How do I choose it?
Yeah.
Disk geometry? So, back in the beginning, we had what, F disk and.
But then the kernel was empty.
I'm sorry?
But then, how about that to affect the fullness of the.
The disk geometry? I don't believe it affects.
It doesn't
matter. No, it doesn't. Your slices don't really affect performance. The size of your slices, disk slices, don't affect anything except.
So it should be on the bundle.
Yeah. I mean, the
disk part. I think
it would be on the batteries. I think you would, unless you have specific reasons to take them off, if you want to save space for something else. If you want to save space for a hibernation, for example, on a laptop, you would need to move it off if you're going to do that after the fact. For servers or anything like that, I would say you start at the beginning and you cut off what you need and have a whole bunch of empty space at the end that you can add to later on. You can grow file systems as you need them.
So if you choose the maximum,
that's okay. Well, let's choose the maximum. You can choose the maximum if you want, but you can't really shrink.
The geometry part, the cylinders, the
second. That's all auto, that's discovered as opposed to just reading the disk geometry.
Okay.
So you don't have to set that.
Okay.
You read it from the disk.
Okay.
Make sense?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
You're good, Edward.
Okay, so I should suspend it here to go to Ed, so I get hold. We'll leave that for now, right? Hold on. So, I'm going to do an FTP source because I don't know why. Proxy, if I want to do proxy for some reason, blah, blah, blah. If I'm going to list the FTP servers out there, basically list all the mirrors. And one important thing to do is obviously use the closest mirror to use possibly. For obvious reasons.
How do you find that out?
Well, you can display the list of FTP servers, or you can go to the website and look at getting releases because of mirrors. Yeah, all the mirrors are basically right here. You AFS, HTTP, or single. Something else. HTTP, right? Figure that out, right? Does that make sense? I'm just installing off the box that's right next to me. I'm just going to do 4.3. Oh, cool. Actually, I don't know. After all this stuff, I don't know if I should.
So that's sort of.
Yeah.
Here's
the list of servers. that we're on creation. One second here, sorry. All right, well, this is not voting very well, you're in.
No proxy. You keep using a proxy.
Oh, crap, thank you.
How do you see that book?
Yeah, that was something. Yeah. All right.
I see white a lot in this one.
So this is the default steps that are there. Anything marker than X is going to be installed, anything not going to be. There are two extra steps in here that are not part of the default, and they're down at the bottom. It's called site 43 and site 43 simply. And actually, maybe this is a good time to go back here. This is where you can do your customizations, and this is kind of the thing that I was alluding to earlier about using something like JumpStart Kickstart. So you can have a site XX and a site XX hostname for even more specific configuration files you can do. What can you do in here? You can do lots of stuff. You can put in the tarball anything you want, essentially. So what it does is that at the very end, basically the extractor cells are just tarballs, and all it does is just untarget.
And you define set.
Oh, the extractor set is a tarball.
It serves what purpose?
Which is where all the binary files, or all the files of the installation. So the installation is merely a set of tarballs.
Okay.
The tarballs are split up into base, things you need absolutely to run the system. Compilation comp, basically, which is all the GCC and everything like that. There's another one called man, which installs all the man pages. There's another one called misc, which installs the random miscellaneous thing.
Okay.
Then there's the X sets, but those are split out as well.
So it's somewhat like packages.
Correct. Yeah, base and packages. And those are called extraction sets. They're called sets.
Okay.
For distributions or
So because they're just merely tarballs, you can create your own. And your own could be customized to install anything you want. And basically, as an installation set, you can distribute your site configuration, site specific things that you have for your.
What original piece did that come out of?
Is that recent? 3 years? 3-4 years maybe?
A while.
Maybe late 3s, I think. 3-7, 3-8. It's been around for a while. So you can do basically anything you want. Now, one thing you'll want to see right here is install.site, which doesn't really make sense. So install.site is really kind of post-install script. So at the very end of the installation, after it extracts all the files, including the base sets, and then it'll extract your own sets that you have. One of the things you can throw in there is called the install site. It's just a script. And what you can do in the script is sort of limited by your imagination. You can add these little files, add packages, whatever. Right? So, if we go back to that.
I have one question.
Yeah.
The installation set compilers come for free. It contains the compilers like GCC, right?
Yes.
Actually, I tried to install TokenBSD once, and I didn't want to use GCC. Instead, I wanted to use PCC. So I installed the system without the installation set, and I was not able to do. I mean,
right. So
how do I install? How do I replace GCC with another compiler?
Well, PCC isn't quite a replacement for GCC yet. So the other thing that the comp includes in it are all the headers, header files, gene, system header files, to do any compilations of anything. The base really includes just base. It's libraries, binaries, majority of the tools that you need on a day-to-day server, forever if you need to do them. But once you start compiling stuff, you need header files for libraries, the kernel source, the kernel, anything you're going to need to do. Plus, PCC doesn't... it still relies on other things that are still there with GCC, but not just GCC binaries. Everything else in the utils there's other things like the CPV, the processor, M4, the macro processor, M4, the macro processor. So there are other things that are included in that you need to actually compile things.
So I need that the installation set, and then if I want, I can install PCC additionally.
Yes, yeah. So if you want to work with PCC, I would install the comp and install everything, whatever. And then go and install PCC, and you should be able to. PCC, basically, I think it compiles most of user land today. I don't think it compiles. It compiles all of it.
Well, that's to be the way to PCC on PCC.
Yes. To be Robert on the other by Mickey Robert, who actually wrote writing it. I really don't know that much about PCC, so I'm not full sense to know much about it. So back to this, X installs it, blank does not. You can simply add or remove by saying minus comp, and it removes comp from there. You can do minus M star, you can do minus G star, you know, the games, right? Bare minimum, you need what's at the top. You need BSD, the kernel, probably one of RAM's kernel, and you need base and probably need etc directory, right? But I also want to install that. So basically, we're going to have a base installation with just with my two sets of customizations. Does that make sense? Move on. Great install, yes, I know. Sure, you're all probably quite.
So we can use your FTP server now?
Yeah.
Because I thought that was...
That's a mirror. That's a mirror. That's a little mirror in my network, that's all. So if I want, I can go back and install more sets.
Yes.
The two ways you can do this, right, if I forgot a set and it's like, oh, you know, I really want to install the man pages, I can go back and install the man pages. You can also install sets after you install the system, you can go back and because they're simply tarballs, you can just extract the tar onto your system and you have the
extract it.
Sorry?
Where would you extract it from?
Two groups, yeah. I can show you that. After we, I'll add that later. So I think I'm done. And it goes to agree. So now, some really quick configuration questions. Do I want to start SSH? Probably. Do you want to do NTPD? No. Am I running X? Yes or no? That's important, basically, because it sets the syscontrol for it, and because it's popular, you can. It just asks you and install script. You're going to run it twice around. Change default calls console on com0. Now, this is one thing that's actually improved quite a bit since the last two, three releases. In 4.3, serial console has really improved dramatically. A lot of the architectures have sort of unified in a sense, and auto configuring and stuff has really become easy on many architectures because the world is not just i3, 6, and 8. It's a whole other bunch of stuff. So there's a lot of work done but there's actually a great Undeadly article about it, about the whole process of what happened. Since this is a remote box, I need to do this or else when I came back in. I want to choose my speed console, yes, 9600 is kind of what I'm using. Because we're in this weird place where I can do this.
That's it.
Oh, that's fine. I was doing US slash Eastern.
Sending it to council.
You can do that.
Yes, please.
Sorry? Okay, so.
You added some packages too.
Yeah, so what I was going to show you the install script. So the install script, really, really basic install script.
So you could take all the stuff that they tell you to do, like a man after the just script it.
Yep. And that's the really simple script that I did. And this is the script that was installed. Apparently, I did something weird with that. So, and at this point, you basically have a working system. And one nice thing you can do is that you can actually put right into it. And I have my working system right here. I can go, this is the user I created. I can probably SSH out if I want to. Extremely slow over console. So I mean, basically, you kind of essentially a working system. You can do whatever you want. If you have some last minute configuration things you want to do here, you can do it even with it.
Something here. You are doing this install through a remote KVM or through a remote serial console?
Remote serial console.
Okay, so the install does boot to console.
Yes. What do you want?
That's an important one right there.
And the RANDIS for
the setting up the console for the installation, that was part of the default install or that was from your install script?
So when I booted the system, you can, with PictiBoot, you can basically, so basically when you PictiBoot with something, right? It looks for the PixieBoot file, right? And then PixieBoot can send a bunch of parameters. And one of the parameters it will send is the contents of etsyboot.conf within your TFTP server. And within the boot.conf, you have these values. And then you can say boot, you can attach it to very, append to that boot bsd.rb. And then you can now PixieBoot a server console installable BSD.RB.
But this has to be at the FTP site that we pointed at.
The PixieBoot site, or wherever you're PixieBooting from.
PixieBoot has to be in a local subnet to be
right.
On the server.
Right.
So you got to have a PixieBoot server in your local subnet.
Yeah, you have to have a whole startup.
Maybe you weren't answering what I meant to ask. I was talking about just the serial console setup at the end that you did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That is part of the default install.
Yes. And all it does is write this whole file for you based on the parameters that are in here. And it basically looks for console. And it's just con0 as console, so I'm going to give user the option to set con0 as a console. Cool. All right, so at this point, what are you going to do? You just want to reboot, right? It's done?
Yeah.
All right, so let's reboot.
Did that
fall?
Has anyone tried porting the installer to other, like, previous people? This isn't bad, man. This is really not bad.
I think it's still the best installer.
Yeah. Because I know I'm
getting.
Right, so you get all the
bias dollars. Yeah, the console.
Yeah, completely. It's really straightforward.
Okay, well, this is boring. You've done it a couple of times.
Huh?
I've already done it a couple of times. It's just so easy.
Yeah,
it's really nice.
I mean, maybe you know, could just be said you want to make the background blue or something. That'd be cool. But
well,
just so it doesn't freak everybody out too much. You know?
if it was colored, I would have liked it probably. Yeah. Flashy with pictures and stuff. Mm-hmm.
So is there a way to automate that installation?
Yeah, you can automate it. You can pull out and you can answer the questions if you want. There's not really an answer file, if you will, like Jumpstart, but you can do it if you want it. Because it is just a bunch of trash, tarballs, you can sort of do it by yourself if you want it to. So there's nothing really.
You have to write a JavaScript to say, I want to set it with these variables this way, or.
Yeah, no, nothing like that exists by default. So there are a few projects out there that do that. Yapo, for example, one of them that Mike Harrelly does. But nothing is by default. And that's, I think, that's cool. So that's it. Actually, I should have shown you some of the things that I don't know. One thing that you'll I don't know if this will be interesting or not, but when I add SSH to it, I hopefully should not get asked for an SSH key. Oh, I got it.
Is your keys there already?
It's not actually enough.
Did you settle that in the SSH key?
Build them something.
Banders.
Oh, actually. Let's do it. That's exactly, you're exactly right. So, it's really kind of a silly thing. All I did was I installed, I have the, let's see if I can pull this up for you guys here. So this is really what was in site file. That's all I put in there. As you can see, I installed the site thingamajiggy script. Put my SSH thing in my profile, whatever. I updated the resolve.com to be my local, whatever it is, across my infrastructure. And this is for the specific host. I save the SSH keys for each host so they never change. I make that comp and my RCA local, so it's specific to the host. And those all got copied over, and they're all part of that. Resolve.com is here, which is you know, I didn't set my name servers in the configuration, the boot, I'm sorry, the installation. They're here now because I copied them over here. And as you can see, I have some things running that aren't running by default, such as isocamd, which are in here, which is what I run by default. So, really, the idea is that this really shows nothing but. A way to customize your installation, and you can do a site XX for your entire infrastructure, and then you can, if you have specific things for your host that you're installing on, you can install that. You can use your imagination, you know, on a class machine, the web server do this and that, something else that is to install the packages during the installation. Very important. Once you're done, send your message to message.org. I'll just say that now because it's super important for supporting hardware. A lot of sensors were. Motherboard sensors were written without hardware, but with just the D messages, the logs and the D messages. So you can actually write drivers without access to the full hardware to some extent.
What is a D message?
Oh, a D message is the dump of the kernel. Let's see if I can get one.
D message.
a type D message on a system. That'd be good for people to see,
like or less or something, yeah.
Sorry?
Yeah, more or less or something.
Okay, you want to see this box? This box, so basically it's the boot of the kernel. And basically all the devices it finds, what it finds, what it configures, what it doesn't configure, only configure around. PCI, one CPU. It really only does have one CPU. OpenBSD does work with multiple CPUs. It's just kind of a list of, as a kernel's moving, it's auto-configuring devices, and this is sort of the, if you will, boot log.
And why would we want to send that to OpenBSD.org?
There are times when you will see things that are not configured. First off, you want to know what device is supported by default that the developers don't have. All of a sudden, it comes across, hey, this device is supported, you didn't even know that was added or was. Another reason is, well, the opposite. Hey, this device, this very common, if you will, BGE, Broadcom device is coming up as not configured. Why is that Broadcom device not coming up as not configured? If it comes up as not configured, it will usually tell you some details and a developer can use to support that device. And those are the important things. There's a lot of hardware sensors. Let's see if I have a device here. Cool. Like this. For example, this is a sensor, basically, and this is not supported. And if I send this in, you can look at the values and see if we can come up with a way to heuristically to support that driver. IIC stuff is very tricky anyway, but that's a separate thing. Most everything in all my devices, I think, are supported. But newer hardware, newer laptops, things of that nature that aren't typically supported out of the box. We can help support that.
So if we have online the new SSD, the app we have online, we upload the new messages. It's obviously a little broader in its purpose than it's a web app. But, and there's criticisms of that, but the point is that, you know, you go on the site, you want to go, okay, let me find every NetBSD box that uses an Anthros chip. You know, I want to see if anybody has a T43 stick pad using an Anthros chip and support of NetBSD. And while the quantity isn't there, you know, it does allow end users who are doing install to sit there and sift through things to some extent. And even though it's not, I mean, I don't know how many, if you clear the filter all the time, how many are out there right now?
Not that much. I have an idea. Yeah, clear the filter?
Yeah, you know, are they all showing right now?
I don't know how this works.
There's a manual for it.
I should know. Total entry is 484.
Just 484, that's the
right
point. It's just that, you know, 484 submissions of e-messages of boxes. So it's quite easy to go through and go, hey, I'm going to filter for, you know, such and such chip, motherboard, whatever. And so obviously the purposes are a little narrower and more directed.
Yes, I think it's first and foremost, it's important to send you a message to OpenBSD, A, because it gets directly to the OpenBSD, and B, because you are guaranteed privacy of your submission. There's an absolute guarantee that this information will not leak.
On the other hand, we sell this.
We sell this before. On the other hand, if you submit it to an Netflix site, it is public consumption.
for your credit report. Someone's fighting you with it.
Right, so, I even have a this is a geometric in X40 from X40. Alright, so we're diverging here, I think. So, this is all in the FAQ, section 4, installation. And so, I don't know how to skip forward and magic point. I'm just going to go through this again. Alright, so I think we've gone through the installation, basically, right? So the upgrade, it's extremely similar to the installation for it uses basically the same RAM disk and just the same install script with some differences, obviously, to do an upgrade. One very important thing is to read the upgrade guide. The website for a specific reason is that you're upgrading to for their any specific things you need to do that aren't backward compatible or supported or that needs to be done, such as there are new users you need to add, a variety of things basically. The biggest one was really when OpenBSD went from AF to ELF binaries. That was back in 3.3, that was 5 years ago. That was a big one. And there's really nothing being that big since IPF got replaced with TF back to 3.0, 2.9, and then 3.3 to 3.4, which is AF to ELF binaries. But you need to read them for some reasons. They have the upgrade guide has notes about packages, important or popular packages that have been upgraded. The most prevalent one being Postgres. Postgres has a tendency to force users to dump and re-import their database when you upgrade major releases. So when you go for an upgrade, no matter what OS you're on, you've got to dump your database upgrade and re-import it. And so basically OpenBSD just goes through some of the major packages that have that. OpenLDAP had that actually in its left, you can see how to later dump and re-import your OpenLDAP if you wanted to have a looking LDAP backwards. Yes.
So with regard to portage and ports in that respect, are the OpenBSD ports maintainers deciding what version of things like Postgres is the singular version? Or are there multiple versions of Postgres supported? So, say you've got a number of users in some environment using Postgres A2, Postgres A3 is the current, frontline version, release version of Postgres. But boy, the differences in terms of the application that use the database, might take an institution a year or 2 years to actually come up to speed, or so it's completely end of life.
Right.
Is OpenBSD making for things? I'm picking on Postgres here, but I'm asking for the bigger picture.
So I think one thing the upgrade process does is it doesn't delete anything. So, and the important thing there with Postgres and anything else is that it does not delete the libraries that the older Postgres you use. So if you have a brand spanking new system, you're going to be installing Postgres, whatever version. But if you have an upgrade that's going on from 4.2 to 4.3, and 4.2 had Postgres 8 to whatever, and this binary or data is compatible between 3 and 4, 4.2 and 4.3, you can still upgrade the OS. The binaries will still, the old libraries, like let's see, anything else that was bumped by Craig during the current or previous release will still be there. So when you boot your system into a new OS, the upgraded OS, all your ports still can remain the previous release. And that goes to something else I touched on earlier. You can use package add update to update everything. You can update some things. You can choose, I suppose, for that. But an upgrade does not destroy the current structure, the current libraries tree, and that just installs on top of it. So like I said, it's an extraction set. It's extract the top of this. In LS, it won't change. It'll be overwritten. But if lib C is bump, the open C is going to be that stuff. So really, all this stuff is the same. Very much similar to the upgrade. So anybody would like to do this? So I'm going to do an upgrade, and I'm showing you how to do something slightly different. I'm going to reboot. This is console, right? Make sure I have this hard game. Yes. Now, what I'm going to do is going to boot into the RAM disk from the bootloader. I can choose to boot BSD, the kernel, or I can boot the RAM disk kernel. So I just have to catch it in time. Hopefully the screen draws that one. Anybody have questions? I mean, am I going to slow this fast? I mean, a lot of this stuff is kind of basic, but I think a lot of, I've heard a lot of confusion, I suppose, and questions. Maybe you can't do this like that.
Yeah. Stay at 1900 baud.
Sorry?
Stay at 1900 baud.
I should have actually increased this to 11.5.
I mean, you.
Is it your idea? Back to the same thing, right? If you're in a shell, I can just like upgrade if I want. Okay, so we're back to this thing. Who wanted to see this? So we're setting up the terminal again, doing English. See if it's upgrade.
Yes.
Choose the disk that has the root stuff on it. The file system exists here? Yes. That's what it exists. Go ahead and check it. Do I want to enable the network that is actually there? Yes, I do. So, that enables it. Any manual configuration? No. As the FSF for various reasons, you can read that if you want. I have a force check my root. Non-root file systems, yes, no. I only have one file system which happens to the root, so. It really doesn't matter what I had there. Here again, we're back to this thing, MTP. We do IPv6 instead. This time we're just going to go to snapshots. Now here's the upgrade, and it's very, very similar to port speed. I'm just going to remove this stuff so we don't have to be bored. Very much similar to the other one. You have the slight, you can put the slight stuff in here as well if you want to do forklift upgrades for certain things. If you want to install new files, based on an upgrade, you can. Same process. Does that make sense? Any questions?
Even the OS?
Oh, well, OS doesn't need the HTML. We'll get to that shortly. That's actually. You're not pre installing Etsy or upgrading Etsy. Etsy is basically looking for the pre install process. Correct. In the past, you used to do, currently it's a 4.3, and earlier you used Merge Master, which introduces BSD or anything else. What's new in OpenBSD 4.4, the current, is something called Sys Merge, which is essentially Merge Master like, stripped down to do just what we want to do. So it's pretty much simple. We just upgraded this notch. We could upgrade it to 4.4 if we wanted to. Sorry?
Merge Master is quite limited in its functionality, so I don't know what you can strip out of it.
Well, there's a lot of stuff. I mean, it's, you know, I can't lie.
Can you do site specific for the
don't use any flex?
Say again?
Can you do site specific?
Do you want to add that? Yeah, so you can do site specific here. And basically, I should have actually done that. Basically, it's the same thing, except instead of install.site, it's upgrade.site. So it's too lazy to write one real quickly. It's upgrade.site if you want to do upgrade type thing that you can use.
So if you do the upgrade and it works for some reason, you're trying to patent or some type of software you have installed, is incompatible and you want to downgrade, would you follow the same process and just point it at?
If we're talking about the base system, we're not talking about packages. The packages are dealt with differently. All we're doing is upgrading the base system. The OpenBSD packages are done separately. There's a separate process.
Okay, we'll have to fall back to the previous release. Yeah. Like, upgraded new release is a problem. You can fall back to 4.2 and 4.3.
They have some custom software, and you know, there's actually,
you have a problem?
Upgrade to the, you know, C library or whatever, and it just so happens I didn't research my software and upgrade properly, and oops, something's broken. And now I just want to, you know, I'll research it now, but damn it, I'd have to downgrade.
You know, downgrade is not really supported. You can try it. The best thing to do is, you know, store my stuff, you know, whatever your tape was.
Where's your tape driver?
Downgrading it.
Restore,
yeah. So, the site access dash host name, is that the hosting that's the fully qualified domain, or do you do it
for
whatever
name?
It's whatever hosting it is here. So, it's
just the. Yeah, I actually have a comment about the restore thing. You know, if you. Before you do the upgrade, it would be actually a pretty good deal, good idea to have a hard back up at least of your Etsy, your bar.
Well, yeah, I think the process worked though. I thought it might be simple, and just point to whatever software you want. So if you have all the Etsy bar and move it, also keep your old copies of your old BSD kernel, put them off on another host. Let's say it's not working, as long as you can bring those back, you do it maybe by this install script.
Untar back onto the system, and reboot, because your old libraries are still there, your old system is there, essentially. Still got the old libraries.
Right, so theoretically you could do it. Theoretically you could do it. Now you could, you have your old kernel, you have your kernel from your previous install, and you can re-extract all your previous base ups if you hadn't saved, or if you were restoring the previous release. You can do that.
Have you done that?
I don't think. I mean, you could basically go backwards. You could.
That's a bad plan. I'm going to bring into that in other operating systems, previous D, other things, backporting, anything. It's kind of like in, use the dev box.
Well, I mean, this goes to like any environment that you're in. If you're in any environment, if you're running one or two hosts, you know, you're kind of on your own if you figure this out. But if you're running the infrastructure, you have an infrastructure. You have the Google servers, you have the build servers, you have fixed users, you have everything you need in your own infrastructure, basically. So, you have development, QA, staging, production, I don't know what, you know, all these thousands of environments you can get for. That's part of the best way to deal with it. Because when you're re-extracting the old stuff of the new system that's upgraded, conceivably you could, I suppose you could, but you probably couldn't do it completely on your own. Because sometimes you have incompatibilities between the kernel and some of the utilities that are in user land that you face. You know, any of the things that the file system gets changed at all. Yeah. Potentially could run the problem. So you need a recovery disk, if you will, if you're going to go down that path. I recommend this for you. Yeah. Right? Yes. All right, so sys merge is the thing that's in for anything that's greater than 4.3. Merge master, everybody knows merge master here from the previous two world. Sys merge really is just kind of stripped down quite a bit. And it does things a little bit differently. There's an automatic mode. There's a couple different things that it does a little bit differently. It's not, 100% yet, but it does everything that needs to be done with a lot less code. All right, so that's really the system. We get to the system. Packages. As I mentioned earlier, it's pretty much package admin is you, right? It's basically what you do. And as long as you have your package path set, which typically you would. Okay, so let's go back. I'll just reboot. So the package, I'll just go for a quick example. It's really simple. I only have two packages installed, so seven. This is where you can do your interactive stuff, you can force certain dependencies, you can do a whole bunch of stuff, read package add, end page. It's really, truly so simple. It's unbelievably simple to do. You can upgrade release to release, or even release to snapshot, in between snapshots. It's super easy. And you can maintain your own ports tree if you want. But some nice ports that are out there, SQL ports and Package Manager, which is only in current, which gives you like a little in-person type thing, which you might like. SQL ports, basically a SQL view into the ports tree. And some of the things that's slightly different than the previous Microsoft Word is that really with OpenBSD, the intent is really to provide quality packages. And yes, you can bring your own ports tree down, you can do your own stuff in it, but the idea is to get majority of the needs met with packages. With a few exceptions where there are licensing issues, those packages won't be built and distributed based on bad licenses or poorly written licenses or whatever. So typically, you can get away with licensed packages for everything. Unless you're a specific need, you can maintain your own ports tree and you can kind of work on your own. One thing that is an important note, which I've noted here, is if you're working with a ports tree, you kind of need to full install. Because in full install, not only do you need your base and your compilation tools, you also need X libraries and anything there. So we have the concept of sub-packages, so you could be potentially building a full port that builds sub-packages, and those would be installed. Maybe you would only want one, but you potentially would be building all of them because you're using port tree. That's where packages come in handy. Since all the packages, you don't have to install all the crap if you don't want to. Now, if you're running in a large infrastructure, you typically will run your own port tree, and do your packages, install, upgrade, and deal with packages over SSH. You can do it at FTP, basically. It's all in the package app, about the different methods you have for your install and upgrade packages. Does that make sense? Okay, so do we want to hear this real quick? I'm just going to go through console first. So, I want to see that. So, in my environment, I have two package paths set, FTP3 and FTP2. And I just upgraded from a previous system, and I want to update my system, update my packages. Only one of them was a candidate for update. Sec is merely a Perl script, so it doesn't need to be upgraded because it doesn't have any shared libraries. That's really simple. But you can. Oh, I don't know. Name something like install. It's kind of install stuff, isn't it? You know, these are different thick flavors, some packages you can install if you want. And I'll just, oops. Of course, you can use it at any point. And then install all the kind of packages that just make a lot of sense, unless you have specific needs that you need to meet. And that's something I think that differs a lot from some of the other methods that you're in. And you get a little doodle about what to do with that installation. Make sense? It's getting boring for anybody. So really the idea was, I've heard lots of discussion about how it can be installing and upgrading open can be somewhat difficult and challenging, so I'm trying to hopefully dispel some of those rumors or anger. So please tell me if I'm not doing that, or if you want me to get further detail about stuff. Because I don't know how to use. So we just upgraded from 4.3 to snapshot because it was easier for me to do. And this exact same process, and that's the whole purpose. You can use a snapshot, you can upgrade a snapshot pretty easily. If you want to help test stuff out, the snapshots are great, running current. Most of the time, snapshots and current are just as stable, if not more stable than stable, for various reasons. This question has been asked a few times, and the answer is that stable typically gets patches that are security or reliability related, and nothing else related. Very, 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 very few times have anything that's feature related gone into stable, but it's always reliability and security, and that's about it. And the reason behind that is really because there's an somewhat aggressive release schedule over 6 months. So things happen. That's one of the reasons why current always basically works. There's a big chunk of time where stuff happens and then it gets all the I's dotted across, T's crossed. Things are cleaned up in the ever release process. So you have a very short amount of time for things to actually linger and draw out the months that things are broken and not working. And I think that's one of the things that the 6 month release cycle helps move that along, and actually you'll notice that OpenBSD evolves in small bits. It isn't sort of all of a sudden it's a massive big change that goes from one to the next. It's very evolutionary. So I think that helps people go through the upgrade process, and it makes the upgrade process from 4.2 to 4.3 or 4.0 to 4.1, 4.2 to 4.3. It makes it a lot less complicated, a lot easier, and a lot easier for people to migrate. From release to release, because it is really incremental changes. Very few times something major happened, such as the binary change had to happen. So in-place upgrades are also possible. This is kind of, I don't know if you would do this, basically just extract the tarball into place. Do you want me to do that? You extract it from root, basically, minus capital C slash, and you extract it, make sure you set the right flags, and so you set the right permissions, and reboot. And there's a few other things you want to do, obviously, if you're doing this, but you kind of should know what you're doing if you're going to be down this route. A couple things you need to do if you're doing it on your own without the upgrade script. But the upgrade script will do basically all this stuff for you. This is the stuff that you see in every environment. Everything's got to be same, or else you're going to stop hinting. Goal server, build box, ArcGIS. ArcGIS is a great tool. It's been around forever. Anybody familiar with ArcGIS? Check it out. Dan runs. ArcGIS is a little different than RSync, but ArcGIS really is a lot of work. It's really just one way. It doesn't do number of tracks. ArcGIS is great, I think, for a distribution server where you have a gold server. You basically make all your changes to all your config files on. So you have 30 web servers, so you want to push a change to all 30 web servers. You have it, and you have your etc directory, whatever tree, on your build server, and you make those changes and you push it. ArcGIS can also run commands remotely, so you can say, when it gets this file, do this. If you know, push all the, say I want to push a whole bunch of group, etc group files out there, or password files, for example. Every time you receive a new password file, go ahead and run NPD for the password database. It's great for things like that. RSync is a little bit different, obviously, it's a lot simpler. It's got, you know, nice little algorithm and two graphics. ArcGIS is some of that, but it's a great tool that's in base, and that's the key. ArcGIS is in base. I don't know where else it is, but it's in base. Which, if you start using OpenBSD, you start appreciating a lot more things that are actually in base. And you actually end up using more of those tools and finding cool ways to use or interesting ways to use those tools instead of solving tons of ports. You can slowly reduce the number of ports. You can sort of figure out how to use those ports. It's right. You can type stuff in there. Patching is the same, I think, with anything. We all know how to do that, right? With anything. Just an FAQ work session. Far more robust than what I'll be able to do right now. Anything else, obviously. So really, there's no magic. It's not like black magic to run and install these being upgraded from release to release every 6 months. You absolutely know that you have an upgrade coming in November and you can start planning for that at any time. And you can migrate applications, you can keep boxes in old systems if you need to do for some reason. I have 3.9 IPs like firewall sitting around. Just work. Maybe I should admit that. So, like I said, once you understand some of the basics of how this stuff really works, and it's kind of meant to be talks rumors or dispel some of the rumors, and hopefully answer some questions a lot of people have had about the install process, the upgrade process, so maybe some of the philosophies of OpenBSD. And I want to see if I can answer some of them. And if I can't answer them, I'll try and find somebody else that's going to know everything about it. Maybe, seriously, any questions? There's tons of information out there. The biggest one is obviously the Mantages. I think absolutely everything's covered under the Mantages. OpenBSD Mantage is incredible. FAQ is fantastic because we show up that. And Undeadly, obviously, is the big website for us.
The beginning of your talk, but I was curious, like, if you use OpenBSD a lot in your day-to-day work, and if so, what kind of challenges do you face in managing, say, maybe over 10 machines that are in OpenBSD, or how do you deal with those kinds of things?
Well, yeah, I deal with a lot of OpenBSD. Not only for myself, but for a lot of clients. I think that the biggest thing that has been helpful to me is coming to the standardized process. And it doesn't matter what LS I use, I apply that process to everything I do, from upgrading to making big files to maintaining customer documentation. It's all somewhat standardized across the board. And I think that kind of removes a lot of the gotchas from managing infrastructures. You kind of know what you have, you know what you can get to. You can document the process to get from here to there. I don't know if that's the answer to your question.
Are you using SpamD?
Okay, yeah, sure. I'm using SpamD on basically all the mail servers that I manage, various clients from kind of small to somewhat big. And I think it's a great tool. I think it's a fantastic tool, and it's been very, very useful so far. It's the front end. It really is the front end to a larger, infrastructure, but it's a great first pass.
Is your clients sort of happy with the gray listing? I mean, how do you manage that?
They're pretty happy with it. I think the places that are happier with it are the ones that are larger. Yeah, imagine that. Because the sheer amount of volume that comes in of spam or of mail in general obviously helps with the whitelist to quite a degree. That
don't you sync it up at all?
Sorry?
Do you do any syncing between the sites?
Not between different sites, but between on the same site you have multiple mail servers and they do run spam.
Right, but you don't do syncing across clients, do you?
No, I don't sync across clients.
Or centralize it or anything.
No, I don't do that. You could do it, I suppose. You can pull down a whitelist. Actually, Bob Beck has his whitelist that he publishes. You can pull down his whitelist if you want. I don't use that in my clients. You can if you want. I suppose you can manage one yourself if you want. Actually, that's probably pretty good because it's got a pretty big install. So you can use that if you wanted to. There's no requirement. So you just want to be aware that you're doing that. So Spamd is extremely helpful.
What are you doing outside of the flow?
Sorry?
What are you doing outside of the flow with Spamd? I mean, you're using Bob's List, China, Korea, blah, blah, blah.
I'm not watching. So in Spamd, I'm not doing any of the blacklisting. Doing the gray listing. No blacklisting. The only blacklisting that happens is manual, and that's very, very seldom. And it's always a manual process of blacklisting for some reason. But I don't blacklist Korea.
You manually put in IPs?
Yeah, it's up there. It happens like
once. You need my manual. Okay.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
What prompts that? I'm just curious because it's something,
Well, I've had it happen once where the mail server has gotten in and the entire four or five IPs from one block got in and they were spamming, I guess, people. That's just fucking uncomfortable. That would have happened. And that only happened once, really, honestly, once. So I really can't say that I do a lot of IPs. Play games with how fast you expire the servers. I'm sorry.
Yeah, going back to your point about the build server, is are RDS the OpenBSD way to issue your changes to?
Is RDS the OpenBSD way?
Is it the OpenBSD way? Because I just started as a shop and they're mostly using the CF engine.
So RDS is pretty old. I don't know how old it is, but it's pretty.
As you look in the previous ports, it's actually called 4.4 RDS.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's in source. It's called Argus.org. I don't actually know when it was last updated or anything. Definitely use CF Engine. You can use rsync. You can use any of the other.
Right. My question was more like, if I have 100 OpenBSD servers, what is the OpenBSD way to push out changes? Is there one way or
two? No, there's not one way.
Okay.
You would. I would use Argus first, and then because Argus works over SSH. Historically, it worked over RSH. It worked over RSH. As long as you have SSH keys, obviously SSH key, and you can control your access to your authorized ketosis, which is on RDSP. You can also write your own script.
You didn't play with software at the
moment? I played with it a little bit. Actually, before I rebuilt that box, I had my object tree on Zopper. Zopper. It works. It's not a complete replacement for Wraith Rain, for example, which is not in default in generic improvement, but it's an option. But I think that over time.
I thought they were totally keeping Wraith Rain up.
No, Wraith Rain is not being kept up. I think it's just being maintained just to kind of keep, kind of just stay alive.
Right.
And they're really the replacement for both CCD, I think CCD, as well as Wraith Rain is software. And I think work is being done in that area to make a viable replacement for both CCD and Wraith Rain.
But you're not really using it. You wouldn't want all that.
I use it on object trees. I use it, I do use it. It depends on the server. For example, firewalls and things like that. I don't have RAID. I have one disk. It doesn't matter. On anything else I have that has an important disk on it, it's Federation Control, which is either RAID 10 or 01, whatever purpose it's there. It's nice. It is nice to do it on systems where you want to also add software on top of it. Strike, for example, just strike across a bunch of disks. Sure. I think it's going to be good condition. It's very nice condition.
Do you use Carp a lot?
Yes, kind of. I set it up, and that's really it. To answer your question, really, ask me anything that's been done in firewalls. Yeah.
Do you just use it for firewalls?
Yeah. And I haven't done anything crazy with it either, so I don't ask any crazy questions.
It is crazy because enough. Talking about car. Ever in Carbon Cross, and you've ever seen anybody else in the open piece of the world, Carbon Cross, two interfaces on the same post.
What?
Why?
All function of Carb is to be on multiple boxes.
Two interfaces, not necessarily connected to separate switches, and you have a redundant router, refresh your upstream, and you want your
router.
You want your IPs to be failing over between the links.
Your router's failing, but your box is not worrying about failing?
I won't even address that because that's in the way that
just opens up for it.
Sorry?
That's not
my question. What's the
question? Does open up both of them?
Hey, Joe, are you out? 2 months ago, I actually had a machine that had something to barrel. It was a machine that already was connected to the core. It was a cluster from the core to the colo. So, this is a
basic. Where you have redundant router infrastructure, redundant NICs, you're going to get one box.
You've got something.
Go ahead, argue.
You really want to play? Say you got a say you're running a massive jailed infrastructure where your synchronization of how you're backing up and creating redundancy between jailed systems is a whole separate issue, right? You're not keeping the state with RAM, so why bother with it? So you've got the rest of your network infrastructure redundant. You want to go over your NICs in the event that the switch that is talking to you dies and you have a quarter
No, I understand it. I understand it. So you go between two switches,
Yeah.
No, I understand that. Yeah. That why would you come with one box as opposed to two?
You're doing my answer is I'm doing it on lots of boxes. Sure. I'm not wanting to cart between lots of boxes because in that case, it's already difficult to keep state of disk rate and also the running system and the running processes. I want them to be able to do this. That's all right.
I may have my answer to this later on.
Really?
Any other questions? Wow. No, you can ask right. Certainly, this is just also the beer, but I mean, I don't know. I mean, what are some of the fears and questions and like criticisms that people have had that, you know, so I can't answer anything. I try to answer whatever I can. Yes?
It's not a question. Yes, I mean, yeah, just so much fears, and you made it look fun, actually.
It's fun. It's very easy. Very fun.
Yeah.
And then, very easy. Very easy.
Yeah. But then there's this other, I guess the other question, though, is mostly regarding upgrade differences. In the previous keyboard, used to compiling kernel user land and having a pretty minimal amount of downtime. The idea even always happens to do the rest of your install world, right, install the world from a single user boot isn't really necessary, you know, from right down to it. So I'm used to doing this on systems.
Okay, so I mean, maybe I should, I left out important hit but yes, you can use source upgrades. You can do source upgrades if you want. You can, there's a tree branch, you can see these up with whichever branch of PC, law 4.3, and you can pull down the release for the next one or whatever you work on. You can work on stable like that if you want. You can keep that tree up to date, and as patches come in, you know, you can either follow the mailing list, follow the security advisories, or you can, you know, update every night and see if any changes. But then, yes, when you see change, there's always a document describing how to apply the patch. The patch actually itself includes the description of how to build it. You know, apply the patch, you know, patch level 0, apply it, make clean, make object, blah, 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 whatever, and make install. You're done. For some of the things you need to remove, some of the things you don't need to remove. So yeah, you can follow stable with pure source, and you can follow current, you can follow the upgrade process, follow pure source. You don't have to do the upgrade scripts at all. You don't have to do that. And you know, if you want to take it further, you can do the same thing with ports. You can pull down the entire ports tree, and you can do make update. Go to the port that you want to update, and make update. It will build the package it up, install the package, and you're done. The question is, in an environment, do you really want to be doing that in every single server? Probably not. Now, do you want to do it on, you know, one master server and distribute this one binary off to, you know, your 50 or 100 servers? Sure, you could do that. And Artis is great for that. You can use Artifact, whatever. You can use SCP, it doesn't matter what you use. You make AFS amount of cops, so that's completely possible, and that's a very much viable way to keep your systems up to date. Not only stable, but upgrade as well.
Is there a reason why why I wanted to see encourages binaries over compiling?
I don't know if it encourages binaries over. It encourages basically packages. There are lots of annoying ports out there that can get somewhat cumbersome to compile on an existing system. That, for example, glib. Have you ever tried to compile glib on another box that's got on the same box that
as running an older version of Jupyter. You have to remove your current version of Jupyter. So you want to do that on production docs? No. You want to do that on a build server? Sure, you can do it. But that stuff is most of the time already done for you, unless you have some very specific need and want to do it. You can do whatever you want on your own. But I think in that instance, to keep things simple, that's where the packages are really advised. I wouldn't say they're 100% required at all. They're more advised for people, I guess. As far as source is concerned, the base system, I think it's equally acceptable to do either way.
Users have a notorious tendency to not use the right tag on checking out source. And you can't build current source on a stable branch. So every week somebody tries this and says, oh my god, the source is broken, it doesn't compile. And you guys are doing it wrong.
Yeah, that happens a lot. You can see that with us. Yeah. But yeah, because exactly it's the type of thing. You have to make sure you know. That's kind of where the documentation comes in real handy, the website. Tells you how to follow current, tells you how to follow release. This is the release. There's always an upgrade. For example, there's an upgrade 3.4.html that tells you how to get from 2.4 to 3.4. Everything you need to do. You can just do a cache file for Etsy if you want to just flood patch to Etsy. It'll upgrade it, just cache Etsy. Everything you need to do. And now you can run version master and whatever you want there. But you can do this with the source and stuff like
did you hear the PowerPoint for your release song? Or do you want to listen to that?
I have not actually.
Do you listen to songs?
I do. I haven't listened to them yet.
On a regular basis.
You want to talk to somebody about it? These songs are great. I love the songs.
I haven't listened to 431. No, I'm sorry. Does that make me a bad person?
Probably. Listen, on that note, one of the things that OCOM's involved in heavily since for many years now, with 90s fucking thing, maintaining a lot of the colo stuff that we have, the boxes that we have, the infrastructure behind it. And unfortunately, what goes on a lot with 90s fucking, a lot of individuals take on kind of, purchasing, grade cars, doing this, doing that, and recently, OCOM, for instance, spent $400 on an LSI scuzzy card, which kind of bothers me because NiceBug isn't about, waters. It really actually needs to be a bit broader in terms of people taking on the responsibility for things. So I think I'm going to pass around a hat to reimburse OCOM at least partially for buying the scuzzy card. I think you're getting to do this, OCOM.
It didn't cost that much, though.
Well, I wasn't sure of the model. It's a scuzzy LSI rate card. So 4-port, 8-port, 6-port. I know it had both the onboard and the battery for it, and
you guys are playing.
So anybody wants to put your money towards that, give the whole time. I'll put a person on nickel and wants a pistol.
Sure. You can put it in one at that point.
Well, you can put an IO slip in it and off it like that.